member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips to the PC. It is Saturday, the 25th of September, Anno Domini 2010, and you lucky people. You're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Linda Wildman.
She's very excited to be here. We're going to have Dave, One Step Ahead of the Law, is not here, and Linda has graciously stepped in at the last moment. She's got that deer in the headlights look in her eye, so we'll...
Well, the first thing I do is I forgot to put it. Well, never mind.
It's not important. What is important is that we are here to bring you news, views, stuff you can use, things to choose, nothing to lose. Let's start with our opening news item, yes?
So I can't hear. There we are. Now I can hear you.
There you go. He may have been reticent to talk about any possible partnership.
That was the button that was making that not work.
But Verizon Wireless Chief Executive Ivan Seidenberg wasn't coy about planned changes to the company's price structure during a conference session Thursday with investors. Mr. Seidenberg said the introduction of new products and services, likely in conjunction with the launch of fourth-generation wireless services, or 4G, would allow Verizon Wireless to introduce a tiered pricing structure. The carrier would follow AT&T, which earlier this year introduced a two-tiered data structure with caps on how much data can be used. But Mr. Seidenberg said the tiers and bundled offerings would be different. I guess we'll have to wait to find out how different, since he didn't put any numbers on it. Seidenberg also told investors that Verizon Wireless, which has 92 million subscribers, is eager to carry the iPhone, adding, "I can't speak for Apple." Currently, Apple has an exclusive deal for the iPhone with AT&T. 4G, which is expected to be the new industry standard, promises faster data transmission, which is increasingly important as smartphones continue to add more data-hungry features and capabilities, and consumers demand better performance from their wireless networks. This puts pressure on carriers to ensure their networks keep up, forcing them to spend billions on infrastructure. Regional cell phone company Metro PCS Communications on Tuesday became the first U.S. carrier to roll out 4G, introducing the service, dubbed LTE for long-term evolution, to customers in Las Vegas. Verizon Wireless plans to offer LTE to 25 to 30 cities by the end of the year. So our question to you at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, when Verizon introduces tiered data pricing, and the choices are, I'll immediately switch characters, I'll wait and see, but I'll likely switch, we'll just have to see, won't we? I love Verizon, and they can do no wrong, and I don't use Verizon. Thanks. Now, I'm sure you have a lot to say about tiered data pricing. I know you have a lot to say about tiered data pricing. So when you're done with the poll, check the yellow box underneath, click on the link that says give us your opinion. It will take you to my website, asknick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
Well done, Linda. And you can enter your information in the opinion area. What do you think of tiered data pricing for smartphones? So far, we've got about 45 people who've answered the poll, and we've got half a dozen or so, five people, who've put in their opinions. And, of course, that's our question to you. What do you think of tiered data pricing? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll-free at 1-800-790-0415. Steve, you had something to say.
Yeah, another one of the things that the Verizon CEO said this week is that they would love to carry the iPhone, but they haven't earned it yet.
Earned it?
Yeah. So a lot of people are expecting that. The problem now is that the iPhone is a GSM device, the Global Services for Mobile Communication,
right,
which means they can run one device all over the world. But Verizon uses a completely different standard, the CDMA. Both sides are going to LTE for the next technology and cell phone.
Right.
So that's sort of what everyone's expecting, is that as soon as LTE gets rolled out, Apple and pretty much every cell phone company now can make one phone that works anywhere.
Right.
So right now, most cell phone manufacturers have to make two different phones, one for GSM and one for CDMA, and a lot of them don't bother. So you only see, say, the Sprint Evo, the HTC Evo is only available on the Sprint network.
Right.
So because it's a CDMA phone, not a GSM phone.
Right.
But it was interesting that the Verizon CEO said they haven't earned it yet.
Right. Because, you know, if you don't do what Steve Jobs wants, you haven't earned the right to sell his phone.
Yeah, that's the first call.
Oh, yeah. Well, I've got that on here.
Okay.
We're going to go to the phones now at 966-JAZZ, 966-5299, or, of course, toll-free at 1-800-790-0415. Our first caller of the week, Bill from Hamlin, New York. Welcome, Bill. What's your question?
Hi. Question about VPN connections.
Sure.
I've got two VPN locations. I have a one work location that I can successfully VPN to using my Cisco VPN client.
Right.
The other one I'm not able to go to for some reason. I keep getting this error 619 message.
Is that also a... now I'm getting a weird... delay in the headphones.
Yeah, we're getting a delay, but as long as it's not going out over the air, we'll just have to deal with it.
Is that second one that isn't working also a Cisco VPN at the other end?
No.
So no, that will just not work with the Cisco client?
It's just a regular network connection. I'm able to... But people have been telling me it might be my router settings because I'm able to log in from another computer outside of my home.
Right.
Through my home network router, I'm not able to get in. So people are saying that possibly my router settings might need to be adjusted.
No, generally what the 619 error means, well, yes. It could be that your firewall or your antivirus program are blocking access to the VPN ports. But that's unlikely since you can get in with the Cisco VPN. So what may be happening is that you have the Cisco VPN also running in the background, and that's blocking those ports from anybody else getting to them.
Well, I can use that Cisco VPN client and just set up another connection
to another Cisco VPN server. If you're not,
it has to be a Cisco VPN server.
Yes, Cisco uses their own proprietary protocol.
Oh, I see. But if I don't have the Cisco VPN client running,
well, is it running in the background, waiting to connect?
How would I know that?
You would, one of two ways. One is to look in the manual. The other is to check if you right-click on the button bar across the bottom, you get a pop-up menu. One of the choices is Task Manager.
Right.
And in Task Manager, if you see the Cisco VPN software running, shut it down.
Applications? It's
right.
Not-
Or processes,
even. Or processes. Could be under processes.
And it may not be called Cisco VPN.
Right. It might be called something else, which is why you really should look in the manual.
Okay.
Yeah, if you're using an L2TP server at the other end, you need an L2TP client at your end. If you're using a PPTP client at the other end, or server at the other end, you have to have a PPTP client at your end. There are several different protocols for VPN, and you have to match the client and server for each one you're trying to connect to.
Well, like I said, when I used another computer outside of my home network to connect to this, mm-hmm. I was able to just use the network connections that are available through your control panel as a creating a new network connection.
Right, but that's a different machine that's not right. Also running the Cisco VPN. The only way you'll be able to tell is if you took your computer somewhere else.
Oh, I see.
I mean, using a different computer means it's an entirely different set of circumstances.
And the standard Microsoft and Apple VPN setups will use the standard PPTP and L2TP VPN protocols. Cisco uses their own, which is why you have to install a Cisco client to connect to a Cisco server.
Right. But if you disable the Cisco client, which you may also be able to do from inside the client software, right, Cisco should have a setup of some sort that lets you obviously put in whatever parameters you need to put in. And then you should be able to somewhere in there say, you know, disable. And then enable it again when you want to use the other one.
Oh, I see.
I think the name of the Cisco client is CVPND, Cisco VPN Daemon.exe. So that may be the process you're looking for.
Okay. If
That becomes a little tricky, is trying to mix and match different servers and different clients.
Right, and that is the problem. Yep. But give that a try.
Okay.
All right, thanks. Before we go to the next call, I should let everybody know that, indeed, we do not have the Ustream up today.
Well, Ustream is running, but there's no video feed.
Right. Ustream itself is, of course, running. Yeah. It's showing the logo. Dave, as we said, is one step ahead of the law, and he had the camera with him. Perhaps he's taking a picture of the high-speed chase, even as we speak. And we'll have that video up later this week. That's always a possibility. But right now, of course, he's not streaming live, so we're not sure quite where he is. I believe somewhere in the Midwest, possibly heading toward the Rockies to lose himself in the mountains among the bighorn sheep.
Have you seen some of the live stream backpacks that are being developed?
Yeah.
This Week in Tech uses one. It uses the Wi-Fi cellular broadband card. They've got one from Verizon, one from AT&T, one from Sprint, basically one from everybody,
right,
to make sure they can get connected, and it can bond them together to give you pretty decent video definitions.
Yep. But there is, I think the Ustream audio is working, but I don't know that. Can somebody tell me that?
I'm getting media
yes.
level, so
according
the Ustream
Jack,
audio
Ustream
should be working.
The Ustream audio is working.
Yep.
It's just no video this week. So those of you who are looking for Ustream, of course, we're also live on the air at jazz901.org. So you can also listen to us live there. And if you needed me to tell you that, you didn't need me to tell you that. What? Something. All right, we're going to go to our next caller, Rick. Rick from Irondequoit. Welcome, Rick. What's your question? Rick hung up. Rick
lost
got
him.
Tired of waiting for us.
Give a call back.
Call back, Rick. We really were going to talk to you. I promise. We were. It's not that we hate you. We were, in fact, going to talk to you. I don't know what else to say.
Well, you can get around to it.
That's
our big problem is round two-its.
Yeah, exactly. It's the square two-its that I have so many of, and I need the round ones. Interestingly, I've been checking my... Here's what's really interesting. I have an Android phone. It's on the Verizon network. They have just introduced an app that tells you your broadband usage for the month.
Nice.
Yes, but it means they're serious about this stuff. It also tells me how many text messages I've sent and how many phone calls. It tells me all kinds of cool stuff, actually. It's pretty neat. So far, I've used about 400 meg for the month. And I really didn't do much. But I also had my Wi-Fi off the entire month. So I think I'm going to leave it off for the rest of this month. And then next month, I'm going to turn it on and see if that changes things. Because all the updates that I got and everything else came through wireless, which eats into my bandwidth. All right, Rick is back on the line from Irondequoit. Welcome, Rick. What's your question?
Hi, guys. Nick, I don't know if you know, I called a couple of weeks ago, the fireman guy, when you guys had the fire alarm, and I was calling about the video problem.
Oh, yeah.
I tried all what you said about downloading a new BIOS and everything else from Dell, and I'm still having the same problem.
Okay, you have to remind us what the problem
is. I also downloaded the new Acrobat Flash Reader and all that kind of stuff, and it's still doing the same thing where it only plays for, like, 3 seconds. It looks like it's loading on the bottom, but doesn't continue to play.
So you got the latest BIOS. You've got the latest version of Flash. This is a laptop?
This is a laptop running Windows 7.
Have you tried completely uninstalling Flash and reinstalling it?
Yes. Actually, several times because I had a hard time downloading. You guys gave me that page where I could just download the program and install it.
Right.
So I did all that also.
This is an interesting question. That sounds then...
I mean, under my old operating system, which was XP, Vista, one of those, everything was running fine. I had no lag or anything like that in any video.
Right. And now the other thing that I think we suggested, and I hope we suggested, I always hate it when people call back and I cannot remember everything we said. But that's happening more and more lately.
I have that years. Problem too.
Yeah. I hope we suggested that you check to see if you had the latest video driver for your laptop.
Yes, I did, and I downloaded the, went right to the GeForce, what is it, NVIDIA cards, and got the latest one for the card that's in here and made sure it was Windows 7 and the whole nine yards.
And it still won't connect at all.
Well, it connects. I see the video, but again, it'll play for like 3 seconds. It'll be, you know, just a constant picture, no video playing, loading on the bottom, but and I get the circle of like it's loading, and it doesn't continue to play. I could maybe move it a little bit down the bar and start it again, and it'll play for, again, another 3 seconds, and that's it.
Does the audio continue, or does it all freeze?
It all freezes.
Have you tried a different browser?
Yes, I both tried using Firefox and Windows Explorer.
And this happens with any Flash, including YouTube?
Yes. Definitely YouTube. That's where I've been going, and well, I've actually gone to CNET to watch their videos on, you know, different products and things like that. It does the same thing there. It'll load and do the same thing.
All right. I want to try two things. One is to try Chrome, which is a browser from Google, and the reason I want you to try that is just to see if the problem is the common coding that Flash and that Internet Explorer and Firefox use to connect to Adobe, although that's unlikely. But let's just get that out of the way. If that causes the same problem, then what you need to do is run a specific uninstaller from Adobe, and Steve will put this online, but the address is fpdownload.macromedia.com/get/flashplayer/current/uninstall_flash_player.exe. Don't worry, Steve will put that up shortly.
Okay.
If he gets it. Then reinstall using the install Flash Player that Steve will also put it up. Download those, close Firefox, run the uninstaller, then run the installer, then open Firefox. Got it?
Okay.
All right, give that a try. Let us know.
Alrighty.
We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, Linda Wildman, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 21 minutes after the hour, Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Linda Wildman.
There you go. Were you waiting for somebody to point at you so you could speak?
No. You're just like, oh, never mind.
And we're back. Hey, here's a very cool thing, actually. The United States Federal Communications Commission, God bless them, has voted to open up unused spectrum in the television band to unlicensed wireless broadband devices, a move that will give U.S. residents access to super Wi-Fi, the agency's chairman said. The FCC's unanimous vote Thursday comes after an 8-year debate about opening up the so-called spectrum white spaces to wireless devices. The U.S. television stations, wireless microphone makers, sports leagues, and churches have opposed the move because of their concerns about potential interference with existing TV channels and wireless microphones, which already operate without FCC licenses in the same spectrum. Commission Chairman Julius Genachowski called the vote a major step forward for broadband service and innovation in the U.S. The white spaces spectrum will be super Wi-Fi with long range, faster speeds, and more reliable service than traditional Wi-Fi, he said. Today we open a new platform for American innovation, he said. This is important and will enhance our economy, strengthen our global competitiveness, lead to billions of dollars in private investment into valuable new products and services. The FCC vote marks the first significant release of unlicensed wireless spectrum in 25 years, Genachowski said. The last major FCC action on unlicensed spectrum, opening up so-called junk spectrum in 1985, led to the development of Wi-Fi, he noted. Several tech vendors and consumer groups praised the FCC's vote.
as more people access information via mobile and other intelligent devices. Additional strain is being put on existing wireless networks, said Craig Mundy, Microsoft's chief research and strategy officer. The FCC action is a great step forward for consumers looking for new wireless products and services, added Harold Feld, legal director of Public Knowledge, don't try this at home, a digital rights group. Feld called on the FCC to reject limits on the white spaces spectrum that TV stations and other opponents may ask for. The new spectrum will actually give us several advantages. Yeah, white space, first of all, is the space the TV stations gave up when they switched to digital.
I thought that was all auctioned off.
No, not all of it. There's a bunch left, and that's what this white space stuff is. White space wireless devices will have ranges of miles instead of feet. They can travel seamlessly through walls, trees, and other obstructions, just like broadcast TV signals have done for decades. And they can deliver network speeds much greater than current 3G or even 4G mobile broadband technology. So sometime in the future, that backpack thingy will just have one antenna in it.
Yep.
For super Wi-Fi. Our question to you, what do you think will be the first to give a super fast super Wi-Fi in this new space? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll free at 1-800-790-0415. We await your calls with bated breath. Not that we're going to bait our breaths for too long, because we have to breathe in order to, well, speak into the microphone and stuff. But I've baited for a moment. Jack, I think, is already the winner. His answer in the IRC chat is Google, of course. If you are interested in joining the chat with us in the Soundbites forum, you go to efnet.org, I believe, and with any IRC client, if you grok IRC, and look for the Octothorpe Soundbites channel, or Pound Soundbites, as our more violent friends think of it, and you'll join the other people in that forum where they talk about things that have nothing really generally to do with the show at all. So I don't pay as much attention as I could. We're also on those Twitters, and you can send us a message at sound_bites. That's us. And of course, you can join us on the air via the Ustream or via jazz901.org. Click the live listen live button. Or, of course, you can just listen live on the air, as many of you are doing. And, of course,
radio. How quaint.
How quaint. Radio. And, of course, we have the podcast, which is available through iTunes or directly from our website. And you know, really, if you can't get to us, that's your own fault. I'm sorry, but we've done what we can here. Other than coming to your home and either doing the show from your house or dragging you with us to the station, this is really as close as we can get. And we can't do a lot more. But, of course, you can also give us a call. You can call us at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. If you're outside the 585 area code, you can give us a call at 1-800-790-0415, and we will be happy to talk with you, just like we're going to talk to Richard, calling from West Irondequoit. Hello, Richard. What's your question?
Hi, Nick. I just bought a D-Link router.
Yeah.
Brand new 2.4 and 5 gigahertz, I think it's called.
Yep.
Do those numbers refer to its strength or its number of bands?
It's the bandwidth.
Bandwidth. I cannot connect. It's located on the second floor with my modem, and it's working fine up there, but I cannot connect to my laptop on the first floor. So those numbers have nothing to do with its strength.
No.
Maybe I
no,
need to bring it closer to the first floor.
Here's
what
the
do you
first...
think?
Go ahead, Steve.
I would say that the numbers are the frequency it broadcasts on. 2.4 gigahertz is the more common frequency for wireless A, B, G, and N. Or A, B, and G, and then 5 gigahertz has been added to the N band as well. What having a dual band router lets you do is create two separate wireless networks, one on each frequency.
Okay.
Apple does the same thing in their routers, and one of the intents of that is that you have your own private network with your own private password for yourself, and you use the other frequency to make a guest network So when guests come over to your house, they can connect into the internet without ever having access to your stuff.
Those numbers have nothing to do with speed or strength or anything else.
Is it a G or an N router?
I believe it's N.
Yeah. So N, the N standard does have longer range than previous standards.
Right. Okay. Well, what you need to do first is take your laptop upstairs and see if it connects closer to the router. If it doesn't, you may not have N available in your laptop, in which case you have to make sure you've activated the B or G. Then once you've got a connection upstairs, you need to figure out what's between you and upstairs, because these are radio signals. And as I said in the earlier news item, they are weak. And if you have pipes running between you and them, or some, you know, metal appliance.
What about cordless phones?
Cordless phones, if you're running, they usually run on 2.4 gigahertz.
Okay.
So if you make sure, well, if they are also running on 2.4 gigahertz, and both devices are, they will interfere with each other and may, in fact, interfere enough to prevent your laptop from connecting. But step one is to bring that laptop upstairs and set it down right next to that router and see if you can make a connection that way.
I'm a step ahead of you. When I set this whole thing up, I had the laptop on my lap, and indeed it did connect upstairs. So apparently it's a distance or a wall problem, right?
You got it.
Yeah, something in the walls is limiting the range.
Okay. I will try to bring the router closer, like out in the hallway, whatever. Another question is, I want to stream, my whole reason for getting this thing is I want to stream a movie from upstairs to my laptop, which is next to my big screen television. Isn't that what the number 5 is for, hopefully,
no,
to stream a video or not?
No, that really is strictly a frequency. It's like Jazz 90.1 is on 90.1 megahertz. You're on 5 gigahertz. It's only a number of a frequency and has nothing to do with strength or speed. The good news is that unless you're running one of the higher turbo modes of your internet service provider, your stream is probably as fast and maybe faster than the than your download speed from the network. So
wireless
N shouldn't be a problem.
Yeah, the wireless N internet is 130 megabits.
130. Okay.
And the fastest internet you'll get off of Time Warner, Frontier, or whatnot is 15 megabits. So your internet service is always the slowest part of the equation.
So these numbers are nothing I choose from on my monitor, on my keyboard. It chooses 2.4 or 5 regardless of what I'm doing.
Well, it depends.
Who's doing what.
Right.
I can't hit a button on my keyboard and choose 5 for a video.
It doesn't
mean a faster download, no.
Right, and it depends on what wireless card you have in your computer, whether it runs on 2.4 or 5 or both.
But you know you've made the connection upstairs.
Yes, I did.
So that works. The only real question you have is where does it die?
And one
of the things that you can do is you've got that little wireless connector signal down in the lower right corner.
Of the router?
Of your laptop.
And that will tell you your signal strength.
Right. You can pop that open and see your signal strength as well. And then
What does it look like, Nick?
There's a down in the lower right corner, it looks kind of like the bars on the cell phone.
Okay.
If it's Windows 7, they're blue?
XP.
They might still be blue.
Little radiating lines on the Mac.
Interesting.
It's supposed to be radiating.
It may be hidden.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So if you pull out that left-facing arrow, you might see it there.
Right, okay.
If you point to everything and pause the mouse over it, it'll pop up a little balloon saying what this is.
Okay.
And one of those will be your wireless connection.
Okay.
And if you open that, you should see a little meter that tells you what the strength is. And you can then walk around the house with that, and
that's a thought. Walk around and see if I connect at some point.
Well, see, you know, start at the router where you know you've got a good connection. Walk away and see how fast it disappears and where and when.
Okay.
You know, for example, I live in a very old house, and the walls are all lath, plaster, and chicken wire. So my entire house is basically a Faraday cage.
Okay.
And the one room in the house where my wife would really, really like to have her laptop, she can't. Everywhere else, it's either okay or excellent. The one room she really, really wants it in the library. Yeah, that's not going
to
happen.
And if you're trying to get through the kitchen, that's often a problem because of all the metal appliances.
Right, right.
And your microwave oven runs on 2.4 gigahertz.
Right.
That's microwave
more thing.
Band.
If I take this laptop closer to upstairs, will it automatically connect or must I?
No, it should absolutely automatically connect. It's searching for the signal the whole time.
Really? I've been playing with this thing, trying to open menus and put in code numbers and passwords till I'm blue in the face. So,
well, if you've put in the wrong password, then it can't connect.
Well, right.
But opening that wireless connection settings, it should continuously look for wireless networks and then let you connect to one when you want.
Right. Well, you kind of need to start from scratch again. You need to go back upstairs,
okay,
connect this thing directly, and then just never touch it again.
And then walk away and see what happens.
You got it.
Thanks, guys.
Yep, good luck.
Bye, thank you.
Yep.
One of the problems is wireless. Wireless is great, but getting it actually connected can be very difficult. You know, you plug in a wire and you're done.
Yep.
But with wireless, you've got to get the frequencies right. You may need to get the channel right. You may, which we didn't even talk about, you may need
just,
to get the passwords right.
I mean, it's just connected to the wireless network here in the school, and I'm running on channel 1 at 2.4 gigahertz. At 130 megabit, and my signal-to-noise ratio is negative 57.
Yeah. but that's,
if you want to know stuff like that,
right,
the computer will tell you that kind of stuff.
Right. So somewhere at some point, it will do that. And it really is pretty amazing. And I'm just connected. I've turned off my wireless, and I'm just connected at 100 megabits.
Out the wire, yeah.
Out the wire, because that's just fast enough and easy enough. But it really
is one of the few times
problem.
That wireless is faster than wired. If you've got N wireless but only 100 megabit wired.
But again, it doesn't matter. If that 130 megabit wireless is connected to 100 megahertz wire
At the other
back
end,
to the router, you're still only going to get 100 megahertz.
Yep.
I don't care what you've got. You can buy a 130 megahertz router and throw it on Roadrunner and still get up to 15 meg. And throw it on DSL and get whatever they'll give you.
You're sharing between computers, so in this caller's case, he's sending a video from one computer to another on his internal network.
If that's what he's doing, then absolutely
that
he'll be able
speed.
To get the fastest speed he can get. Yes.
Yep.
Yes, absolutely. Well, no, he'll still probably only get 100 megabits.
It depends on where.
It depends on what he's connected.
The other computer, is it
right,
wired
right,
or wireless?
Right.
A lot of the N routers I've seen come with gigabit wired ports. Because,
but then you have to have gigabit in your desktop or laptop.
Yeah. So there's so many variables in the equation that it's almost impossible to know what speed you're actually going to get.
Yeah, it does. It gets a little crazy. It's not that it can't be done. It's just that there are a lot of variables nowadays. You know what? What I keep saying, price of poker keeps going up. You have to know more. You have to figure out more. You have to think more. You have to plan more every time. That's why there are professionals like Steve and Dave and me who will do that for you. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, Linda Weilman, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour. We are Sound Bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Linda Weilman.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites.
I keep waiting to be third.
I know. we have somebody on the line, but hold on. I need to talk about this news item first. Speculation has been mounting that Apple is developing a smaller, lighter 7-inch iPad. New rumors from Chinese sources are fueling those flames, claiming that the smaller iPad model is, in fact, completely developed and ready to start manufacturing en masse. Or en masse. A report. I can do that well today, considering that I'm so stuffed up I can barely breathe. I can talk like I am French. A report from Chinese tech blog Sanzai.com states, yes, there will be a 7-inch tablet. Yes, it's well underway in terms of product development, and in fact, it's a finished product. The site also claims that it has that as many as 5 different designs have been intentionally floated about as a diversion to distract from the real design that Apple intends to use. Granted, the tech rumor and speculation mill is only half a step up the food chain from the sort of celebrity gossip sites. But like the celebrity gossip sites, there is also often at least a hint of truth in the stories. And every once in a while, they're dead on with breaking news. Since the iPad launched, there have been those who claim it is simply too big. And I am one of them. The bigger screen is awesome. The extra display real estate gives developers more to work with. But a tablet seems uniquely suited for one-handed operation. At 9.7 inches and weighing in at a pound and a half, the iPad can be a bit unwieldy, particularly for those with arthritis and or carpal tunnel syndrome. My hand goes numb holding that thing for any length of time. 7 inches seems to be the magic number for tablets right now. The Samsung Galaxy Tab is a 7-inch tablet. The Rim tablet, expected to be unveiled next week, is rumored to be a 7-inch tablet. Dell revealed that it's working on a 7-inch tablet to follow up with the 5-inch Dell Streak. Apparently, 7 inches is the tablet sweet spot, and it's all the rage right now, so why shouldn't Apple get in on that action? Even at the smaller size, an iPad will probably weigh more than its competitors due to its sturdier construction. Other tablet devices and e-readers use primarily plastic casing, which helps bring the weight down but aren't as solid as the Apple tablet. According to the Shanzai.com blog post, the final design will in fact bear more resemblance to the iPhone 4 stylings than the original iPad design, the unique stylings of the iPhone 4. I suppose that would mean a flatter form factor, probably with glass on front and back, but hopefully without the antenna engineering woes that have so plagued the iPhone 4. It's possible that all of these rumors are wrong, of course, and that Apple is intentionally circulating various rumors to distract from its real next-generation iPad. Not that Apple has ever intentionally lied to all its millions of rabid and avid fanboys. There are many reports of the next iPad having a camera and FaceTime capabilities, even some speculation that Apple could rush the launch to compete against other tablets in this holiday season. As more Fortune 500 companies look at embracing the iPad or tablets in general, the smaller 7-inch form factor may be better suited for easy transport and one-handed computing on the go. Our question to you, would you prefer a 7-inch tablet to the 9.7-inch iPad? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, or of course toll-free at 1-800-790-0415.
So one of the problems with that is the marketing lineup, because right now the high-end iPod Touch is $399, and the low-end iPad is $499.
Right.
So where does it fit in the marketing lineup? You know, let alone the
$299.
Well, you couldn't have a tablet with a bigger screen cost less than an iPod Touch with a smaller screen. I suppose you could, but it wouldn't make marketing sense.
$429.
Yeah, somewhere in there.
Yeah.
Or drop the price on the iPods, but they just released the new iPods a couple weeks ago and set the prices.
Yeah, luckily that's not exactly our problem. But you're right. It for Apple, it becomes a marketing issue.
Yeah.
For everybody else, it becomes a, hey, let's just put one out at the lowest price we can issue and let Apple catch up.
Yep.
Which is good for us if the carriers don't get in the way. I'm anti-carrier at the moment, I have to be honest. It's I don't like the idea of tiered pricing. I don't like the idea that it costs me more to get my data than it does somebody in what we traditionally think of as a less technologically advanced nation. Clearly, we're wrong about that. All right, never mind all that right now. Let's go on back to the phones. Our next caller is Joanne from Greece.
Hello.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Peachy, thanks.
I'm going to buy my 13th, 15th, and 16-year-old grandchildren laptops for Christmas. What should I look for?
Wow. Somebody really, really rich to adopt you.
Yeah, right. That'd be good.
All right, they're 13. What are they?
13, 15, and 16.
13, 15,
and 16.
Working
and all right, right, right. Nonsense they do.
Well, here's the question, and this is a serious question. Is this going to be for, how do I put this best? Are you buying this for them for schoolwork or for everything, like gaming and everything else?
Everything. Yeah.
Well, now you've just
doubled
the price, added a comma, right? If you're looking for something that also does gaming, you're looking at a very high-end laptop, the Sony Vaio, that sort of range, and the $3,000 range.
No.
You are, if that's what you want it to do.
Okay.
If what you're looking for is something that just lets them get on the net and do their homework and maybe a little slow and whatever, you can go as low as a netbook for a few hundred dollars. And there's huge ranges in between. My suggestion to you is this. First thing you want to do is take a look at the range of stuff. And really, although we rarely mention companies here on the show, one of the best places to look at those is someplace like Lightspeed Computers, which we were there just a couple of weeks ago and has like a dozen of them just laying out on the counter for people to look at, dozen different models. Also, the big box stores like Best Buy and Target and that, which have aisles full of them. And take a look at the various models and what they do and how they work and what they cost, which is really your thing. Yep. More importantly, have your kids play with the keyboards and the screens.
Okay.
Because they're going to spend most of their time staring at the screen and using the keyboard.
And the younger kids probably have smaller fingers and will get away with a physically smaller keyboard versus the older kids.
Right. You should be able to get something in the $1,500 range that does all of that stuff. But if you really want, you know, if your heart is set on them doing games and watching videos and all that other stuff, it's going to cost you more money because you have to have a better screen resolution, a better screen itself, and a much better video card.
Okay. I just want them to do homework, I guess.
Yes, I suspect you do.
Yeah, type
so you ought to be able to get away with under $1,000 each, anywhere from $700 to $1,000.
Okay. Well, that gives me a good...
Thank you. I'm sorry, Joanne. Yeah. I know what you want is a $300 laptop that works like a $3,000 laptop.
It does everything.
There's no such animal.
You can type papers on it, but if your homework is designing a, you know, a CAD simulation or designing a video game, which we're seeing high school kids doing that type of homework now.
No, I don't. I'm not saying no, but what may be useful for that. Of course, you've got three kids, so this is almost impossible.
Yeah,
I have one big machine at home.
Yeah, yes.
And then they get time, you know. Mm-hmm. You get an hour, you get an hour, you get an hour.
We at MacAv, we're a little concerned about giving younger kids laptops because then they tend to go off in their room and you can't keep an eye on what they're doing.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And even through the best intentions, you can accidentally go to bad websites.
Yes.
So we like to recommend, you know, the family computer is in a public room that, that all the kids use.
Yeah.
Yeah. I completely agree with that. My daughter, I got her a laptop to go to college with. But before that, her computer was a desktop and it was in the same room as my computer.
Yes.
So we worked together and I could just look over my shoulder and see it.
Yeah. That's what they have now.
Yeah. And that's, you know what? Maybe when they go to college.
Okay.
They get a laptop, but until then, you know, I say this all the time. I say this to my daughter all the time. You have 100,000 friends. You've got one dad. Right. I'd rather be the dad than your friend.
Yeah. Okay, that's a good thought. I can handle that one, too.
There you go. Yeah, like buying nothing. There you go.
Yours better, yeah.
Now, what you might want to think about doing is buying, but now, well, I was about to say get him an iPad or something like that, but that gives you the same problem, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, once they've got the...
Right, then they're suddenly in their room all the time doing who knows what to who knows where. So, really, you know, you want to give your kids everything. Believe me, I get that.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is you're not their friend, you're their mom.
Yeah.
Be the mom.
Okay. I can buy into that.
There you go.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Be strong, Joanne.
Okay, bye.
Get them roller skates, for God's sake.
And that's...
Let them go outside.
Yep. That's a problem we see frequently, is someone will buy the $299 computer special at the box store, and then even sometimes like simple games, I want to get on the internet, and it turns out they want to run Farmville on Facebook.
Right.
Well, that's a flash animation, and that's pretty processor intensive, so that $299 computer may not be able to handle it.
Yeah, I thought my poor wife, God love her, I thought she was going to have a coronary when Facebook went down earlier this week.
Yeah.
I can't do Farmville. They better not take away time from us.
Yep. Okay. We were talking about that in Second Life last night, that you know you're powerful. Mark Zuckerberg is now richer than Steve Jobs. And Facebook is getting a theatrical movie written by Aaron Sorkin, where Steve Jobs got a TV movie written by Robert Cringely.
Right.
Although Noah Wiley played Steve Jobs and Anthony Michael Hall played Bill Gates.
Right. But they're TV actors.
Yeah.
You know, they're not movie stars.
Yep. The fun thing was that after that TV movie aired, and it was on TNT too. It was an off network.
It wasn't even broadcast. It was cable.
Cable network. Yeah. Noah Wiley opened the next MechWorld, lot of people didn't realize it, especially farther back in the crowd.
Right.
And he started going on and on and doing all the over gestures, and then Steve comes out, no, you're doing it all wrong. You get the water bottle first, and then you start waving your hands around.
And I'm going to have to break in because it's 12:55, and we have to make an announcement.
Oh, ooh. Please, make all the announcements you want.
I just want to remind people that our fall membership campaign here at member-supported Jazz 90.1 starts on Monday, October 11th. And you can give us a call at 966-5299 or toll-free 1-800-790-0415 to make your support known, because we rely on listeners here at member-supported Jazz 90.1. And when is the first Saturday for that? Can you think of the date?
I think the 18th. I think we miss most of the whole first week.
Yeah. So the 18th.
Yeah, 11th is Monday, 16th Saturday.
16th.
Yeah. Okay.
So listen, call in. And you people.
And I've even heard that if you pledge early, you can receive a bonus gift.
I've heard that too.
It's not a bad idea. And
I read that right there.
You can, yeah, right. You can, in fact, call anytime, make a pledge, tell them it's 4 sound bites, and we will get the kudos and you will get the extra gift. This station, God bless the folks here. These people took us in. We were homeless. We had nowhere to be and nothing to do, and we were homeless. And they took us in and sheltered us. And now all we're asking is that we all reach into our pockets and hand out a few bucks to these folks. We're not asking you to pledge at the $1,000 level, although God knows that would be great. There are lots of levels, but if all you've got is $5, send us $5. Show these folks how much you appreciate the fact that they've given us a home. And that they gave us 2 hours every week on a station that really doesn't need to have us here. But they gave us a home and really changed everything they do. They don't have call-in shows. They don't have talk shows. And they brought us in. They gave us this stuff. And we really love being here. And we hope you love us being here as well. So when we get to the pledging part, show the love. All right. Do we have time? We don't really have time to pick up a call. The folks who are on the line, please stay on the line. We talked through this next segment. I apologize for that. But, you know, we are a member-supported station. It's the only way we stay on the line. If you want to see this show and this station continue, then you need to pledge. It's a dog-eat-dog world, and when the folks who really run this station sit down every year to figure out what goes where and who and how, one of the things they look at is how much money does it bring in? And I hate to be the crass son of a pup who brings that up, but that's the truth. And so really, we would love to shine. And doggone it, we need to beat the polka guys. The stinking polka guys beat us 2 years in a row, and it's nerd power, man, nerd pride. We need to get in there, and we need to beat them this year. So you take a look at your finances and figure out how much you can send in. And like I said, it could be a buck. It could be $5. It could be $10. If you can pledge at one of the levels starting at $35, God love you. You get all kinds of cool prizes. But the big prize is knowing that you're part of the family, and we want you to be part of the family. We invite you to be part of the family, and all it takes is a phone call and a pledge. Start thinking about it now, so when the pledge drive starts, you're ready. Or you can call in early and be a smug son of a gun before the crowd. How is that bad?
That's a thought.
That's right. Remember, when you pledge, you can be smug. People complain all the time. Oh, you guys are begging again. It's terrible. You know who complains? People who don't pledge. Because they're guilty. They feel guilty. You know? We have people who say, well, I'm listening to the pledges and I'm smiling because I'm a member. I think it's great that you're asking other people to be members as well. Join the family. So it's the non-pledgers who are the complainers. Look, we're going to take a break. If you are on the line, please stay on the line. We will get to you after the next break, I promise you. This one will be just a little longer, but we'll be back for you've only wasted 1 hour of your life. We've got another hour for you to waste. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, Linda Wildman, who is doing a great job. I had a couple of comments about, you know, people miss Dave, but you've got such a soothing voice and such a terrific personality. You give good radio. Clearly, that's what's happening there. I'm Nick Francesco. It is 59 minutes after the hour. We are the longest running computer show in the known universe. And we are right here on the truly great, truly generous, truly open-hearted, and oh, by the way, member-supported Jazz 90.1. So you stick around for another hour. We'll be back. Linda will speak in your ear if you call up. It's very exciting. And we'll see you on the other side of all the good stuff that's coming your way. Don't go away.
Got a computer question? Call the boys now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll-free 800-790-0415. Online at soundbites.org. Soundbites continues next on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Linda Wildman.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. For those of you just tuning in, shame on you. But you may notice Dave is not here, and the lovely Linda Wildman is in his place. He's one step ahead of the law somewhere in the Midwest with the camera. So there's no video today on Ustream. But we're here, and we've got folks on the line. So we will get right to the phones. Our next caller is Tim from Webster, New York. Welcome, Tim. Nope, it's not going to be Tim. We've lost Tim. I asked him to be patient, too. That happens. I apologize. We get, sorry, I beg your pardon. We get sometimes a little long-winded here, or I should say I get a little long-winded here, I admit it. I get passionate about things like being member-supported, and consequently, I talk. I talk too long. It's my job. I'm here. I'm a talker. That's what I do here. And so... we're going to talk, instead of talking to Tim from Webster, please, Tim, call back. I apologize. We're going to talk to Chuck from Holly, New York. Welcome, Chuck. No, apparently we're not going to talk to Chuck either. We're not talking to anybody today. It'll just be me. Please allow me to sing a song for you. He made the night a little brighter wherever he did go, the old lamplighter. See, if you don't call in, you get me singing, and you really don't want that, particularly when I'm all stuff up like this from a cold. I'm not entirely certain quite what I sound like, but I believe it's something like a seal with adenoids. We're going to try. Uh-oh. Looks like we're back to Rick from Irondequoit. Is this the same Rick we called in earlier, our fireman?
Yes, it is, sir. Back
yes.
again.
Yes, it is.
But I have good news. I think you solved it.
Oh, excellent.
Let me tell you what I did in case there's anybody else that has the same problem or did what you told me. I went to Google Chrome, downloaded that, and installed it and everything else, and everything there the first time played fine.
Yep. So the problem is, in fact, Firefox and I... Well, you know what? How much memory do you have?
There's about 3 or 4 gigs of RAM.
Oh, that shouldn't be a problem.
Yeah. I also, well, after I did that, I still went ahead and did the uninstaller, like you said, and reinstalled that, and it seems to be playing through. I mean, I've had a couple of glitches, but, you know, I think that's just with, you know, the usual glitch.
Right.
But it's just, it plays, I played a whole video right straight through without a problem, went to CNET and started to watch some of their videos,
With Chrome.
And they played right through. So
yep.
back Great. To, I think, it being a problem with Acrobat and just maybe too many installs or, you know what I mean?
Yeah, who knows? But the reality is, I think if you let yourself get used to Chrome, you'll be really, really happy with it as a browser.
Okay.
It's lightweight, it's fast, it's terrific. Give it a shot, Rick. You're
Thanks,
a fireman,
really
you're fearless.
Yep.
One of the problems with Flash is that they find so many security problems with it that it gets updated almost every week these days from Adobe, who was going to do quarterly updates if necessary.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Right.
But there's a really neat website to go to in any browser. You can go to mozilla.com/plugincheck. And that will list all of your plugins, your Flash and your Java and Shockwave and Silverlight, any plugins you have, and let you know if those plugins are up to date or not. Firefox does these checks automatically now because the Mozilla people want to make sure you keep up to date on your the security holes, especially in Flash because it's used so frequently. So mozilla.com/plugin check, and it will tell you if your plugins are up to date or if you need to update something.
How cool is that? All right, now we're going to try to get Chuck from Holly back on the phone. Welcome, Chuck. What's your question?
Hey, Nick, long-time listener. Really enjoy your program.
That's what we like to hear. Thanks.
I wonder if you could help me with a computer problem. I'm running XP Service Pack 2, and I have an annoyance that comes up at startup. I get the startup. At startup, I get a message that says that it's error loading Windows, and I get DERODI2DLL. I can't. I don't know.
Say
what
that again.
DELL is.
Say that again. D E what?
It's D E R O D. I mean D E R O D. Then it's I two. I've gone on Google to try to find out what it is, and I just can't find it. But I go to the startup menu. I find it there. I unclick it, and then of course it tells me to restart the computer. When I restart, it tells me I'm in the configuration mode there, and to select normal and restart again. And when I do that, I'm back to where I started from.
Well, yeah, unclick that in MS Config, and then don't go back to normal. Leave it unclicked.
Leave it unclicked.
Yeah.
Okay.
Don't go back to normal.
Just don't go back to normal. Just disregard that.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I can't find what that is either. Is it DDR0 or DDRO?
No, it's DEROD.
Oh, DERO. DERO. Yeah.
No zero in it.
Okay.
DERO as an alphabetical D, and then it's I2.DLL.
Yeah, that's clearly a specialized DLL for some product. One of the things you might want to do is go to revouninstaller.com, R-E-V-O uninstaller.com, no spaces, of course. Download Revo and run it and look for that DROD-I2.DLL and see if, in fact, you can just delete it. Delete the whole thing.
Okay, that's Revo, R-E-V-O,
uninstaller.com. Right. You got it.
Hey, thanks a lot. I really appreciate it, Paul.
Yeah, good luck. I don't... That's clearly a DLL for some specific piece of software, but I don't know what.
And it must be a fairly small piece of software because Google doesn't find it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, there's 100 million DLLs, and that's it's one of the things I really dislike about Windows is anybody can load a DLL anywhere at all.
Yep.
And who knows what it does or why it does it or anything else.
That's one of the new vulnerabilities out in Windows, a zero-day vulnerability in the DLL path, that the order that DLLs are searched for, some programs will change your working directory when you launch the program and then load DLLs from your working directory. Mm-hmm. And so the bad guys can insert a DLL with the same name of a system DLL and just insert it earlier in the path, and you're screwed.
Yeah. All right, our next caller is Tim from Webster, New York. Welcome, Tim. What's your question?
Hi, guys. Windows XP question.
Mm-hmm.
If I reinstall Windows over Windows, do you have to reinstall all of the applications again?
If you install Windows over Windows, then no.
Okay, and then does that clean up the registry and
no.
do cool things like that? Oh, okay.
No, that's got to be a clean install.
Yeah, it can fix some problems, but not all.
No. And you would need to reinstall Windows completely from scratch in order to clean up the registry.
And then so you have to go through all the incremental installs to get back up to Service Pack 3 and on and on? Is that true?
Yep.
Okay, so it would be quite well. Okay, that's my question, guys. Thanks a bunch.
Yep.
Set aside a weekend.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Especially if your older, your original discs are SP1 or SP2, then you've got hundreds and hundreds of updates to load before you can put on SP3, and then a couple dozen since SP3 came out.
Yeah, it takes a long time, no matter how fast your internet service provider is. It just takes forever to do, and it's an interesting situation that people find themselves in. One of the things that that we tend to do is at work we've got gigabit to our closet and then 100 megabit to our desktop. So we don't have that problem as such. But man, at home it's painful. All right, our next caller is Sal from Fairport, New York. What's up, Sal?
Hey guys, I got a question, Steve. The last security update. I just installed it a few days ago, and now
I can't
see my scanner.
Sorry, security update for what?
For the Mac, OS 10.6.
Oh, okay, sorry.
And what happened?
And my scanner's gone. I've tried different USB cables, different USB ports.
Does the system profiler see it on the USB bus?
I'm trying to think. No, I didn't even look on that part. I tried all the other parts as far as missions and tried different scanners even. Doesn't seem to find it. Any scanner. I have a second scanner from work. So you should try the profiler?
Yeah, check Apple System Profiler to see if it's even showing up on the USB bus. It's like the hardware interrogator in Windows.
Right.
And it may be that the security update is too secure.
Right, blocking.
Yeah.
A little too much, yeah.
And there may be a patch for that.
Okay, I had scanned something right before that. And
but if you tried
days before that scanner was working.
Yeah, if you tried several scanners and none of them worked, are you using the Apple Image Capture utility or the scanner's own utility?
Both. Tried both.
Is this an HP scanner?
Epson. Okay, let me see. I'm booked. I'm trying to. I don't see under USB. You're saying?
Yeah, in System Profiler under
Epson
USB.
Epson scanner's right there.
All right, so the computer sees it on the hardware, so it's definitely a software issue. I would try a new username, make a temporary new username, and see if it works there. But it does sound like that security update is conflicting with the scanner software.
Just have to wait for a new update?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, all right. I have a test user, and I'll try it on that and see if that works. So maybe if you put anything about it. It just seemed to happen right after the security update.
Yeah, it looks like I'm reading the details on the update, and one of the things that it worked on was scanner vulnerabilities.
easy to have no vulnerabilities when you take them all away, right?
Yeah.
It's exactly clear it right up, didn't it?
Oh, it sure did.
Yep.
No problems there. Okay. All right, thanks. I'll try a different profile.
The other thing you could do is try completely uninstalling a scanner, right? And reinstalling it.
You could try that. But Apple has their own scanning utility that's supposed to work with any USB scanner.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, it worked with the business scanner. Yeah. I just plugged it in, it detected it, was ready to go, and I was able to scan immediately. And then when I tried even that one, it didn't even detect any scanner being plugged in directly or with two different cables.
Well, but I'm saying is you there's got to be somewhere where the memory of those
Epson's own scanner driver utility. You could try uninstalling that.
Right, but I tried an HP one, and that had no installation of any software whatsoever.
Right.
It was
so just using the Apple driver.
From Apple.
But somewhere there's a file that says, oh, yeah, I've seen this hardware before, right? I mean, if you were open up you open up your printer thing, it sees all the printers that you've seen before.
Yeah, there's a list of scanners and printers that it supports somewhere.
Anything under preferences?
No, it's a file in your library.
Never mind, that's probably not the right thing to do. But I was going to say if you remove the memory of that printer, it has to find it again as brand new, and that might work.
Right. Okay, that's a good thought too. Okay,
There's a printers folder that stores all your print queues. I'm not sure if there's a scanner driver folder for the same scanner queue.
That's really what I was thinking of.
Yeah.
Yeah, they should, because it, you know, that scanner, the Epson one, can't be used as a printer, although the HP, it's one of those, you know, multi-scanner.
Yeah, some of them are all-in-one. Some of them are unitaskers, so, yeah.
Yeah, because it shows up if you look under the system preferences under the printer, you know, the sharing, and it shows up as a separate scanner. And whereas the HP showed up as a printer scanner under printer.
Yeah, yeah. User library printers has the list of your print queues. Sometimes you have to delete the print queue from there as well as delete it from system preferences.
Okay.
But I'm not sure if it has the same thing for a scanner queue. I don't have any scanners connected to this computer.
Right.
But
Shell right,
okay. does, so you should look.
Yep.
Good luck.
Under each user, you're thinking?
Right, yeah. It's a user preference in the user library printers.
Okay.
Let us know if you find it.
Okay,
thanks.
Sure. Thanks.
All right.
Yeah, it's always the problem is that the bad guys are exploiting something built in to the system, and when it gets patched, you're never sure what it's going to break to patch what the bad guy was doing.
Right, and that becomes a problem. That's a problem under any operating system. Yeah. And it's not, you know, it's not unique to anybody at all.
It's one of the reasons large corporations are hesitant to install Windows updates because they never know if their mission critical programs are going to die.
My Windows guy tests all of our updates before they get installed.
Yep.
We have to do that. All right, our next caller is Jim from Churchville, New York. Welcome, Jim. What's your question?
Hi, thanks. I've got an HP laptop I've had for about 6 months, and from day one, I've gotten somewhere in their messages that my Teredo tunneling adapter isn't working. And I've gone to the device manager, and it's got that handy-dandy yellow sign with the exclamation mark. When I go to the general tab on that, it says this device cannot start, code 10. And if I go to the drivers, it gives me the opportunity to update it. And I guess it's Microsoft's, but when I go to Microsoft, I get the message that it can't update it. And I don't even know what a Teredo tunneling adapter is. Do you?
It's part of the VPN, isn't it?
Yeah, it would be a VPN. Tunnel? Is this a work machine or a home machine?
No, it's just a home machine.
And it came with this thing.
Yeah.
Are you running 32-bit or
Windows 7, I'm sorry.
32-bit or 64-bit?
I've got both. And to be honest with you, when I turn it on, I don't really know what I'm running. I don't pick anything. I suspect I'm running 64.
Yeah, it's whatever was installed originally.
Well, it shows both, though. Like, I can pick Explorer Explorer.
Well, programs.
64-bit or 32-bit.
Right, programs you can pick either way, but the operating system has to be installed one or the other.
Okay, well, then it's got to be
64. If you went to your computer properties, it should tell you what it is.
Right.
And that's a lot of the errors I'm seeing, is that this Teredo scanner doesn't work in 64-bit.
Okay, because my computer property says general computer. That's it.
But it should say Windows 7, whatever version.
It doesn't say anything but computer.
All right, listen.
Well, there's something much more wrong then in your computer.
Yeah, there really is. Hold on. We're going to take a break, but stay on the line.
Okay, thanks.
And we'll get back to you in just a couple of minutes, but we are going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, Linda Weilman, Jim from Churchville, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 21 minutes after the hour. We are the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Linda Weilman.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, before we go to the phones, I just have to say, Jim Tay on the Twitter thingy here, originally says, you know, Miss Dave, but Linda has such a nice, soothing voice. Then I sing and he gives me a gib slap. All right, I don't care. We're on the line with Jim from Churchville about his Teredo tunneling
adapter. Okay, I just looked up the computer, and it says it's ACPI 64 base PC.
But here's,
so you are running Windows 64-bit.
Yeah, here's the thing. The Teredo tunneling software... Steve actually looked it up, God bless him. It tunnels IPv6 over IPv4.
Yeah.
See, that means nothing to me.
Yeah, and it doesn't mean anything to anybody since almost nobody's using IPv6 yet. So one of the things that you might want to do, the first thing to do, and I don't remember if you said you did this, is try to update the driver directly from the driver tab.
I did.
Just click that update driver button. What happened?
It said that it couldn't update it.
So Microsoft doesn't have an update for it.
Right. Then what you might do for the nonce is simply disable the device.
Okay. But I don't know how to do that. Oh, there is. I'm sorry, there's a disable button here.
Yeah. I was going to say, if you don't see
the
disable,
details,
there you go.
I just looked at it.
All righty, there you go. Okay. I was about to say, man, if that's not there, I don't know what to do now.
But I don't know if I'm missing something. It doesn't sound like it's that serious then.
Well, you are missing something, but it's something you don't need.
Right, something nobody uses yet. Here's the deal. IPv4 is the protocol we all now use, is the numbering scheme we all now use for the Internet. The IP address. Every computer has a unique IP address, right?
Yes.
We're almost out of them.
The
scheme we're using is IP version 4. There is an IP version 6.
Yeah, everyone, your IP address has four groups to it.
Right, and IPv6 will have 8.
Okay.
And
that should be IPv8 then.
You would think so, but V8 has to do with engines. So here's the thing. Or juice. So here's the thing. Well, IPv6 has to do with engines as well. If you're not, almost nobody really uses IPv6 yet. So it's not something that's essential right now. What operating system are you using?
Windows 7.
Windows 7, man, that's supposed to just work.
64-bit, yeah.
There's clearly something not right there somewhere.
Yeah, and
so
the Microsoft website said that it couldn't update it.
Right, so for now, disable it.
Okay.
And maybe in 6 months or so.
Check it.
Yeah. You may find in the not terribly near future that you can't get to certain websites. But that's not going to be for a while. Trust me on this.
Yeah, the problem is that every computer in the world has to switch to IPv6 at roughly the same time for it all to work right.
Yeah.
Yeah,
here's the thing. It's like switching on a light switch to get light.
Mm-hmm.
Only in order to get light, you and 100 million of your closest friends all have to flip that switch at exactly the same moment.
Okay.
So they're not quite sure how they're handling this. They're trying to slowly roll it out, but it means that some places are doing both. I mean, for example, RIT has both IPv4 and IPv6.
Yeah, so that was my problem. I didn't know if I was missing something or not.
No. almost certainly not for months, if not years.
Okay. Okay, that makes it easier.
There you go.
I'll just keep checking it then.
Keep checking it every 6 months, a year. You know, when you change your oil,
who's your internet provider?
Time Warner.
And do you have your own local LAN router?
No.
So well, straight Time Warner connection.
Yeah, I got the Time Warner through their modem.
Right. I don't know if they supply IPv6, so the error message could be correct. It can't start IPv6 because you're not getting an IPv6 network.
Right, and if you're behind your own firewall or whatever, I'll almost guarantee your IPv4.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I do have a zone alarm.
Just disable it.
Okay.
Yeah, just disable the Teredo adapter because you don't really need it yet.
You don't really need it.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot.
There you go. All right. Just yet one more networking problem that people are going to run into in the future.
Yep.
But you're right. For 99.9% of people right now, IPv6 is simply not necessary.
And they're also trying to implement DNS security so that you have secure connections to DNS. And that's another mess. And then the strict transport security, and that's another mess. All these security features that need to be enabled on the Internet just would break so many other things that, you know, no one's ever going to be able to use them.
All right, our next caller is Bodan from Rochester, New York, whose face I have finally seen, by the way.
Greetings, Nick. I haven't seen you since that star-studded event a couple of Thursdays ago.
It was star-studded. We were both at the Wine and Jazz Festival. It was great. Now, I have to ask you, is there an H in Bodan?
Yes, there is.
Oh, okay. I've been spelling it wrong all this time, and I apologize.
Bohdan.
Yep, I got that
it's
now.
A very
Linda corrected
Eastern
me.
Eastern European Ukrainian name.
Is it?
Yes.
Bohdan Khmelnytsky.
And even Polish Solidarity leader Lech Walesa has a son, Bogdan, except the Polish people write it with a G.
Ah, and you write it with an H.
Correct.
See how that works? You're just one off from each other in the
That's
alphabet.
Right.
It's not that big a deal.
No.
Can't
hey, gentlemen, my friends in Connecticut are singing the praises of your security tango. I visited them, and they were complaining that their computer is just sluggish and slow and everything. So I told them about your website, and I got an email this morning. I thought I'd pass it on to you. They downloaded a number of the programs, including Super Anti-Spyware, Malware Bytes, and after she ran Super Anti-Spyware, it found 921 buggers, as she put it, and Malware Bytes found 216. It, you know, they said, yeah, it took a little while to run those programs, but
yeah.
it cleaned it all up.
Yep.
And it also said that CW Shredder removed something, and Stinger came up clean.
Nice.
That's good. You may want to run Super Anti-Spyware and Malware Bytes again.
She said, last Friday, I ran Super Anti-Spyware and Malware Bytes, and it only came up with eight spyware items.
Because sometimes they're memory resident. You have to restart to remove them and run it again to make sure it gets them all.
Yeah, and that's why I've crafted the tango the way I have so that it tries to get as much as possible. Bodan, I really appreciate that. Thank you. I want to thank your friends in Connecticut. Please tell them to listen to the show.
And one final question. Again, this is in regards to the Super Anti-Spyware. I downloaded and currently have the free edition, which apparently the only difference is that if I upgraded and paid X number of dollars and got the professional edition, it would include real-time blocking of threats.
Right.
Can you take a second? What is the advantage of that? And who would actually benefit from that? The scheduled scanning, I'm not overly impressed with that item. So that really, you know,
right.
But what about the real-time blocking? When would that be an advantage, for example, give me, you know, this is, you know, if you do this is where someone can benefit from that?
Well, frankly, it would be beneficial all the time.
Okay.
Because what happens is when you're on the Internet, we're seeing more and more of the sorts of things that you go to a website, it's a perfectly innocuous website, and some jamoke has crafted a Google ad that automatically downloads a virus to you. Super Anti-Spyware would help prevent that.
The real-time blocking would
the
catch it.
The real-time blocking.
Right, but if I ran it you know, on a weekly basis, would it not pick it up at the end of the week when I ran
it?
It
would, but that means you've had it for up to a week.
Gotcha.
Right? And so the idea is to keep your machine as clean as possible, you want that real-time blocking.
So there is an advantage of paying the X number of dollars and getting the professional version.
And there's two reasons to do that. One is it's a benefit to you, and secondly, it's a benefit to you in that they will then be encouraged to continue the product.
Gotcha. All right.
And again,
thank you.
Thank you very much. Please tell your friends to listen to the show and become members. And also, please click on the links in the Google Ads on the Tango. I need the money. I'm probably not supposed to say that. I believe Google actually has a paragraph in their setup that says you shouldn't encourage people to click on your link. So I'm not encouraging you to go to the Security Tango at securitytango.com and click on the ads that pop up. I am not encouraging you to do that. Thank you.
Now, what's to stop a web designer?
I got a child in college.
Yeah.
I have no shame any longer.
Yeah, what's to stop a web owner from making a program that just goes click, 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 click?
Oh, Google will catch that in a hot New York minute. They actually can catch that.
Yeah. You remember the guy that took out an ad? Are you virus-free? Click here to be infected.
People click.
Thousands and thousands of people clicked on it, and he made many hundreds of dollars.
Yes. Yes, I actually ran for a while, and this was, now if anybody from Google is listening, and if you're not, why the hell not? But I ran this as an experiment when I was taking classes in college. I ran what I called a Google trap, and it was a site that was specifically designed. I looked for things that people were really searching for that also made a lot of money in terms of click-throughs, and it turned out to be LASIK surgery. So I started a site about LASIK surgery, and I put news items and blogging things in it. I made just metric buttloads of cash off of that thing. It actually scared me. And I know it's not ethical, so I stopped when my report was done and I had done my research. But it was...
It's one of those...
It was frighteningly effective.
That number's
got to
be wrong.
Yeah, I kept thinking
there can't be two commas in that number.
Well, there were two, but it was amazing. It was amazing. It was amazing. It was like having a second job. It was amazing, and I was pretty impressed by the way you could do. Now, Google, that's 2-3 years ago now, so it's certainly Google changes their setups fairly regularly, so I doubt it would work in quite the same way now. But it was a bit of an eye opener, frankly. Wow.
So how to make money on the internet? Be the first to think of something.
Yeah, there's that. That ought to do it. Be insanely innovative. There you go. And you know, I didn't do anything illegal beyond setting up a Google trap. I mean, I didn't, you know, get friends to click or you know, create an auto click or anything. I just put it out there as it was, because that was the research I was doing.
Yeah.
You know, will total strangers randomly find my site because they're looking for LASIK eye surgery? And will they read my site, which is, you know, looking at Google Analytics? And will they click on the links? And what percentage? And all the yada yada. So it was all this research. And it was a legitimate research project, and when it was done, I took the site down. But I just, as a kind of a special adjunct to getting my master's degree, I made a lot of money off of that one. Wow. All right. So do we have time for news? Yes. Yes, we do. A highly sophisticated computer worm that has spread through Iran, Indonesia, and India was built to destroy operations at one target, possibly Iran's Bushehr nuclear reactor. I do not speak Iranian, and I apologize for that. I don't apologize for that. I'm American. We don't learn foreign languages. We just shout louder until you get it. We're not that bright. That's the emerging consensus of security experts about the worm, not about Americans not being bright, who have examined the Stuxnet worm. In recent weeks, they've broken the cryptographic code behind the software and taken a look at how the worm operates in test environments. Researchers studying the worm all agree that Stuxnet was built by a very sophisticated and capable attacker, possibly a nation state, and it was designed to destroy something big. Though it was first developed more than a year ago, Stuxnet was discovered in July 2010 when a Belarus-based security company discovered the worm on computers belonging to an Iranian client. Since then, it has been the subject of ongoing study by security researchers who say they've never seen anything like it before. Now, after months of private speculation, some of the researchers who know Stuxnet best say it may have been built to sabotage Iran's nukes. Experts at first thought the Stuxnet was written to steal industrial secrets, factory formulas that could be used to build counterfeit products. But what they found when they researched it was something quite different. The worm actually looks for some very specific settings, kind of fingerprints that tell them it's been installed in a very specific programmable logic controller or PLC device, and then injects its own code into the system. Because of the complexity of the attack, the target must be of extremely high value to the attacker. So that's pretty interesting. What do you think? Targeted to sabotage Iran? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, for all of Bodon's friends in Connecticut, toll free at 1-800-790-0415. We're going to take yet another little break while I actually take a breath. And we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, the great Linda Wildman, me, Nick Francesco, and each and every one of you. It is 39 minutes after the hour, and you are listening to the longest-running and possibly most interesting computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
I love jazz, so I spend an outrageous amount of time listening to Jazz 90.1. It's my way to stay in the loop with the local jazz scene and the local musicians. And I love the specialty programs. They're programs that I cannot find anywhere else. With Jazz 90.1's Facebook and MySpace pages, I can listen in and stay tuned in with the local jazz scene from my computer and my phone, too. I jump in on the exclusive contests and chat up with people who believe in the music. You can too. Visit jazz901.org and click on the icons to visit Jazz 90.1's Facebook and MySpace pages. That's how I take jazz further, with Jazz 90.1.
Hi, this is Charles Benoit. Join me and the entire Smart Set tonight from 5 to 6 right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
At the American Lung Association, we're fighting for a day when we can all breathe easier. We're fighting for clear skies over every city and healthy lungs throughout the country. We're fighting to free millions of Americans from the addictive grip of tobacco and the devastating effects of lung disease. The American Lung Association isn't just fighting for air. We're fighting for all the things that make it worth breathing, and we can use your help. See what you can do at fightingforair.org.
If you own or run a business, consider promoting your business on Jazz 90.1 through underwriting. When you underwrite the programming on Jazz 90.1, you join with our members in supporting great jazz radio. With a few tasteful statements about your business, thousands of Jazz 90.1 listeners will know who you are, how to reach you, and that you care about great jazz programming. Underwriting is easy and very reasonable. It's good business to do business with Jazz 90.1. For more information on our great underwriting packages, please contact station manager Rob Linton at 585-966-2660. That's 966-2660 or email sales at jazz901.org.
Hi, this is Otto Bruno inviting you to join me every Sunday afternoon at 3:30 for my new show, Sinatra and Company.
I have got you under my skin.
I'll feature the music of Frank Sinatra as well as those with whom Frank worked and played. Artists like Dean Martin, Sammy Davis Jr., Count Basie, Rosemary Clooney, and many more. So join in the fun with Sinatra and Company every Sunday afternoon at 3:30 right here on Jazz 90.1.
I would sacrifice anything.
Hey, this is Derek Lucas, host of The Spectrum. Join me every Sunday night from 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Linda Wildman.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And we are just possibly thrilled and maybe even delighted to be here. Uh-oh. Many of you realize that after Facebook, that Facebook went down on Thursday. And after it went down, one thing was certain. People don't like to go without their favorite social networking site. Linda, are you a Facebook?
I don't even have a cell phone.
Wow. Wow. You are off the grid. Holy cow.
But I do have a computer.
Oh, there you go. Hey, now we're talking. That's all right then. Industry watchers say Facebook users suffering through the 2.5-hour outage were like drug addicts going through withdrawal. Facebook's more than 500 million users have grown accustomed. It's its own nation. It's the third largest country on earth. Have grown accustomed to sharing updates about their cats and colleagues and posting funny pictures of drunken friends and kids acting silly and having no idea of privacy. They certainly don't like it when the social network site goes down. This shows how integrated these tools have become into our everyday lives, said Rob Adderley, principal analyst at Adderley Group. It has become, you know, all you have to do is start a company with your own name and suddenly you're the principal in it. It has become nearly an addiction and it is difficult for most of us to turn them off. Social networks have a status aspect to them and we are hardwired to need status, so they are very easy to become addicted to. While Adderley said sites like Facebook have nearly become an addiction, others go even further. This past summer, a report from the Oxygen Media Insights Group, which is part of a company that focuses on websites for women, noted that a majority of the women in a survey said they are addicted to social networking sites like Facebook and Twitter. 57% of the women polled said they communicate with people more online than they do face-to-face. 50% of the people polled, the women, they were all women, said they communicate more with people online than they do face-to-face. 39% called themselves Facebook addicts. Analysts say social media's addictive qualities aren't only catnip for women. Men are also up posting, uploading, and checking out news feeds throughout the day. That was evident on Friday when Facebook suffered its second outage in as many days. With Facebook offline, frustrated users flocked to vent their frustrations on Twitter and even resorted to email, which is now being viewed as kind of retro since the advent of social networking. It's true. People don't email. Kids, young folks, the college students that I work with, they don't email. They don't know from email. They don't care about email. They don't do email. They do social networking. While some users joke that U.S. worker productivity might skyrocket without Facebook, others said that instead of focusing on work, they spent their time complaining about the outage. The outage and users' reactions to it made clear how connected people are with the site and with the friends and family with which they communicate on it. So our question to you, and you need to be honest about this, give us a call. Are you a Facebook addict? How did you feel when it went down? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, or toll free at 1-800-790-0415. Now, I know most of you are going to pretend to be curmudgeons and say you're not actually on Facebook, you're not actually on Twitter, you're not actually doing any of that stuff. There are 500 million people on Facebook alone. Surely we don't have only the rest of them. So don't lie.
I read an interesting article, I think it was in the Register, about a study they had done in Britain on Facebook addicts. And this one woman says she normally gets up about 10, gets on Facebook, and then goes to bed about 5, 6 a.m.
Wow.
Spends several thousand pounds a month buying stuff on Farmville and other Facebook games.
Yeah, let me tell you, Farmville is crack. It's not like crack. It is crack. It's crack that comes through the network.
You use crack to get down off of Farmville.
Exactly. This is how they wean people off Farmville. They give them crack. It's astonishing. My wife does it. My daughter does it. My sister-in-law does it. Half a dozen of her friends do it. And my wife was complaining, and I hope she's not listening. I really kind of hope she's not listening. She was complaining. She said, I can't harvest my crops. They're going to go bad. Facebook better give us back those hours so she doesn't lose her crops. It's like I can't live without my Facebook, my Farmville. Do you know you can go to 7-Eleven and you buy stuff that has Farmville codes in it so you get things?
Yep.
My wife, 2 weeks in a row, brought home those little styrofoam donut things that they sell there. And I'm sure they're wonderful. I just did not eat any. And to get the codes off the thing and the big glasses of stuff to get the taste of the whatever, to get the code, not the soda. And you can actually, on the racks, you can buy gift cards for Farmville in the 7-Eleven. I've done that. I gave them to my daughter for her birthday. I gave them my wife for her birthday. And it was the best present. You know, I gave my daughter an iPod Touch for her birthday, and she liked the Farmville cards better. So now I'll save the money and just get the Farmville cards. I'm not stupid. I respond to the right stimulus. So that's it, kid. You're never getting another iPod Touch, but I'll give you the $5 Farmville card all day long. That's fine with me.
I was reading a blog the other day, F My Life.
Yeah.
There's some interesting statements on there, and one of them that I read was that this couple was having sex, and the woman had to stop and go harvest her super watermelons or something.
Yeah.
Facebook is more important than sex.
Yeah, apparently for some people it is, that people are addicted to these things. Well, online addiction is not new. You know,
and Facebook addiction is becoming recognized as a legitimate addiction.
Yeah, there's no question to that. From the very beginning, from the very first moos and muds and stuff like that, multi-user dungeons where people got online and just chatted with each other. They were really the first chat rooms. People have talked about the addiction of those things and how people would spend 10, 15, 20 hours. Dave Enright tells this story on himself. He used to spend, a mortgage payment. He was calling a bunch of the bulletin boards.
Bulletin boards,
back in the day.
On dial-up.
On dial-up, and they were all in Buffalo. And he spent so much money, it was a mortgage payment. And when I got him on broadband, I helped him hook up his machine and taught him how to, you know, get onto broadband. It was like I had disappeared from the house. I could have been dancing naked, juggling flaming torches behind him. He would not have looked around. And as I left, I said, you want me to call you at 11 o'clock so you can go to bed? He said, no, I'll manage. You sure you don't want me to call? No, get out. Get out. He said, get out. So, all right, I went home. I went to bed. The phone rings at 6 o'clock in the morning. Now, my father was still alive but not healthy. So a 6 a.m. phone call gets you out of bed pretty freaking fast. I jumped out of bed, ran and grabbed the phone, and I said, hello? I hear, you son of a beep. I said, morning, Dave. How'd you sleep? He said, I didn't. I just got a wake-up call from my service, and I'm still online. I said, you're not blaming me. I told you I would call you at 11 to get you to go to bed. He said, I know, but it's your fault. I said, it's not my fault. He was addicted. Now, he's toned down some, but, you know, there are addictive personalities, and everybody is addicted to something different. Yes, Linda, you look...
Well, Bodan is calling with a follow-up question, but he doesn't really want to be on air. He's just asking... For whatever he was talking about, and I don't recall, does he have to uninstall or will the free version override?
No, I believe when you pay the money, you get an... this is super anti-spyware. I believe when you pay the money, you get a code, an activation code, and you just put it in the software. He was calling about he's got the free super anti-spyware, and he wants to pay for it. But I believe you can just register it, go into the... free version. I think there's a registration button. I don't have it on this machine because this is a Linux machine. But so I'm going from memory here. And as we know, my memory is where am I?
It is two separate downloads.
Well, yes, if you were to buy it. But I think you can register the one through the other. If not, then Bodan, you and since when did you get shy? Get off that. You probably should uninstall the free one and then install the paid one if it is in fact a full separate download. That would probably be best. But yeah, I'll tell you, it does astonish me the number of people who stop me everywhere and say thank you for the Security Tango.
Yep.
I'll have to start telling them to click on links. But the reality is that this is something that is so necessary, particularly for Windows users, but also for Mac users and Linux users and Android users. There's sections for each of those people on that site. It is something that is so necessary in these days when viruses, Trojans, worms, all that malware has become big business. You know, it's not just... kids counting coup. Now it's people trying to steal your identity to make money. And so I felt the need for this. I felt that I couldn't really charge for it. It's the knowledge of the actual products are out there. Everybody can find out about them. So the information on that stuff is out there. Certainly I can charge you for that. I suppose I could charge for, you know, the way I put it together, the steps that I ask you to follow, because that's been honed over years. But I'm not going to charge people for the site. If people click on the ads and make me a buck, that would be great. But the reality is that this is something that I think everybody needs, everybody should have, and I'm happy to provide it. So please spread the word. Spread the word about the Tango. Spread the word to everyone. When people ask you when you're on line with other things, tell all your friends in Farmville, all those hundreds of neighbors you got. You know, in the real world, you get four neighbors to a farm. And then maybe, you know, the people on either side of those farms. But I spent summers on a farm, and I happen to know that the next farm is 8 or 10 miles away. And the farm beyond that is like in another county. So
it's only half a day's walk.
It is only half a day's walk. It is. Unless, of course, you're driving a pig to that neighbor, and then it's like a four-day walk, because pigs don't walk in a straight line. Let's not go there anymore. The reality is this. The reality is, in Farmville, you can have like 200 neighbors. I don't understand that, but that's whatever it is. I see. My mini rant gets cut off. Are we at the end of another show? Have we wasted? Folks, there's 2 hours of your life you're just not going to get back. Somehow you've managed to wander into the Twilight Zone with us, and now it's 2 hours later and you can go back to the real world. We want to thank each and every one of you who called in. We want to thank those of you who didn't call in. I don't know what we're thanking you for, but thanks for listening. Thank you all for listening, and please remember the pledge drive coming up. Start thinking about it now, because your generosity is what keeps this station and us on the air. I want to thank Linda Wildman, who did an incredible job this week standing in for Dave Enright. She doesn't have the tattoos, but the rest of it is good. And, of course, for Steve Ray, who stayed awake through a good portion of the show. I'm Nick Francesco. See you next week on Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Thanks for listening.